Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Street Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Renzo Martinez.
Welcome back to the one, the only Second Print Comics, brought to you by our friends at Box & Sons Coffee. You know, a lot of you, your wives talk to me. Not in the way that you think, but I get the messages. Hey, you know, my husband likes listening to your show in the morning. I just wish, you know, he could have a little extra pick-me-up, so that way while he's listening to you and trying to multitask with the kids and everything else and the dog, you know, he could be a little bit more alert. And they would never, ever, ever say he should not listen to the show while doing that. No, no, no. These are supportive, good wives. Instead, ladies, I've got a solution for you. Hook up your man. Hook up yourself with some Fox & Sons coffee. Brazilian honey prep, Tanzania pea berry, Fox Den blend, electric boogaloo, so many different options. And people have been asking, is this the type of coffee that you gotta have with a lot of milk, a lot of creamer, get any flavor? Is it just that regular stuff that you're seeing pop up online whenever you see 20 different companies selling the same type of bean? No, because the beans are sourced directly from a guy who knows his stuff. And I can tell you, as a former creamer fiend, whose coffee was more like coffee-flavored milk for many years, I don't need much to get this going. So we're going to go ahead and hook you up because I'm a man of the people. Second Print Pod is the code you use at checkout to save 15% off or more of orders of $25 plus. So go ahead and check out foxandsons.com. That's FOXSNSONS, foxandsons.com. Use code a Second Print Pod at checkout to save 15% off or more. Caleb Franz is joining us. Caleb, how do you like your coffee?
I drink my coffee straight black. So
you're one of those people.
I am. Yeah. Very bitter man who likes his coffee as bitter as I am.
I never drank coffee black until I started drinking Fox & Sons. And that's a legit statement. So each one, like I like the electric boogaloo because that's a really fine dark roast. It doesn't have like this weird like McDonald's aftertaste that a lot of people have. You know, the Brazil honey prep is my favorite. It's a little bit sweeter. It's more in the middle of that. And then their Fox Den blend. I've been giving those out to people because Steven hooked me up with some bags. So yeah, I think I'm at the point now where it's like I can drink coffee without anything added to it. And I like it. It's actually a more enjoyable experience. I feel the testosterone flowing through my body. You know, it's like the basic white bitch in me is just like, flee. It's like, you know, leaving me. They should do a pumpkin spice one, I swear. That's when all the wives reaching out to me will be like, yeah, yeah, sir. So speaking of a basic white woman, Caleb, I'm not watching the Marvels. I think this will make the first MCU movie that I will not go see in theaters. I can't do it.
I must say it's surprising that I have beat you to not watching an MCU film in theaters because yeah. You know, we both go back and forth on this all the time. Like I have always loved the MCU. I still think the Infinity Saga is one of the greatest achievements in cinema history just because of what they were able to actually do. But after I never went to go see Thor, Love and Thunder. And then the first MCU film that I watched after that, I think was Guardians 3. So
that's a good year. Substantial, and a half.
Yeah, substantial break in between because I don't want to go see things that aren't actual you know, quality films that I've expected from the MCU. And it's kind of depressing because before the end of the Infinity Saga, I would always have the utmost confidence that even if it's not necessarily my style, I knew I would enjoy myself and I knew that, you know, I would have a good time. And in the Infinity Saga, I think the bottom of the barrel for me was like Iron Man 2. Not by any stretch of the imagination.
And that movie hasn't aged that badly.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just not,
it's adequate.
It's not up to the quality as the rest of them. But it's not at all a bad film. Its biggest sin is that it serves basically as filler in between or setup for the Avengers rather than an actual Iron Man film. Everything, almost everything, I won't say everything, because there are some highlights, Guardians 3 being one of them. But most properties since the end of the Infinity Saga have left me thoroughly underwhelmed at best. And that is unfortunate, but it is something that I think there's some pretty obvious, like, I do think that the reason why we got here is pretty obvious, as opposed to like what they're not making movies in the same way that they made the Infinity Saga. So
a couple weeks ago, I went ahead and did a solo episode, which was 10 ways to fix DC Comics. I was just talking publishing. I was just doing that. And we came up with the idea of how about we flip the script a little bit? Let's think of some ways that if we could go ahead and get our own like freaking Infinity Gauntlet, if we could get Iger,
those fingers and
just do everything that we possibly could. How could we repair the MCU? Now, this has been a conversation that people have had passively in the Second Print Comics Fan Zone, our private Patreon group, which I'll go ahead and give a plug for later at the end of the day, because we've got some big news at the end of the episode. So go ahead and don't just fast forward there. But Second Print Comics Fan Zone, people have been saying, you know, if we just went back and fixed this, if we took out this character, if we reemphasized this story, if we omitted this year's worth of content, maybe it could be good. And I've been thinking about the last couple of days, and I keep coming back to, maybe they should have just stopped. Maybe they should have just stopped. I can't think of anything between now, well, between 2019 and now, albeit both Spider-Man films, because obviously, and Guardians 3, there is no significant moment, no anything that I can't think, I probably didn't need this. So we'll go ahead and just start with this. Caleb, as you look at the MCU, and maybe this will just be the starting question, do you make changes with the plot, the story, the characters, or do you make changes with the writers, the studios, the actors? Where does it kind of go? Because I feel like I can't blame the products. I've got to go back to the source of it, which is these people don't even know freaking source material.
Yeah, after I think the rise of the MCU was such an anomaly in the history of cinema, in the sense that, you know, I see some people go back and say, well, these movies were, you know, they were never that good, and you know, the MCU is finally just like, you know, audiences are finally catching up to it. That's bogus. The MCU was fantastic up until about 2019, 2020. And it, if you go back and rewatch it, like those old movies are, they still hold up really, really well. For the most part. I think it comes down to the fact that during the Infinity Saga, the writers were fans themselves and they were making movies for the fans, the kind of like high quality, high production value films that we as kids always wanted to watch when we were watching, you know, the Saturday morning cartoons, and we would sit around at the lunch table at school and say, man, wouldn't this be so cool to see these things in live action? Like that's basically what the MCU was. After they saw how profitable that was, and of course the Fox still kind of threw a whole wrench into it as well, they started making movies for the normies instead of for the fans. And the normies were going to, you know, thoroughly enjoy this because they were high quality films. But whenever they started doing that, they started almost kind of, snubbing their nose at the fans to a degree, saying like, oh, you people are impossible to please. And you people, you know, same thing that Star Wars went through. I think it's actually a very comparable analogy to say that we are in the sequel trilogy era of the MCU. After I think the multiverse saga is the sequel trilogy for MCU fans. I think that's a very, very apt observation. And the basics of the MCU in the Infinity Saga was that it wasn't the crossovers, even though that was awesome. It wasn't, you know, the interconnectivity of everything and the callbacks and the references. For some reason, the writers got it in their heads that that's what fans like. And that's not what fans like. Fans enjoy, I mean, some of the best MCU films in the Infinity Saga, albeit like, you know, Infinity War and Civil War, those are some of my favorite films. And those are very crossover heavy with a lot of interactions between cross franchise characters and everything like that. But, you know, some of the other ones like Winter Soldier or, I mean, you know, even the first Iron Man, those are some of my favorite films. And it has next to, I mean, especially compared to today, next to no crossover, you know, appeal or anything like that. Maybe a few references here and there, but nothing to what the writers think that the audiences want. And that I think is very indicative of the problem, is that they think all these superficial things that that people cheer in theaters over, they think that's what they were cheering over. And it wasn't. That was the payoff. But the heart and soul of it was that the MCU, I think I mentioned this during our Guardians review a few months ago, the MCU is about heart and it's about heroes. They don't want to see heroes that are these broken shells and, you know, this like form of gray. Like, no, what made the MCU cool was that they were just heroes doing heroic things. And we love to see it. We, you know, the audiences were excited to see heroes go out and actually be heroes and not these like broken, pathetic shells of characters.
And I find that it's everywhere in the content space. Mm-hmm. When people are criticizing the MCU since 2019, mm-hmm. the moniker MCU has been there, and it's turned into what I will say as a caveat. I feel like it's turned into some woman hating stuff, which I can understand from people that want to see more of that. If you thought that Rey was the best character in Star Wars since ever, then I could see how that could bother you. But I felt like it just became disingenuous for everybody. It was that the male characters, you know, Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, you name them, that, you know, they've taken too much time. They've taken too much of our attention. Let's divert to these strong female characters. Emily Blunt hates them. She's gone on the record, done interviews.
Yeah,
she says,
I hate it
when I see strong female character, because it's always masculine. It's always incredibly shrill, mm-hmm. and it's without emotion, without character. And women don't identify with that.
Yeah.
And what it's turned into in terms of female characters, and obviously She-Hulk was the biggest one, is it turned into, we're all the victims of men. It's constantly men. It's not just bad people, it's men in general, because they find one bad guy and then they're like, y'all, you men are the same. They try and take the worst people and try and say like, you're all one bad day away from turning into that guy. Black Widow as a movie, I thought, was a good film. I still will say that's probably one of the ones where if it were on TV now, I'd watch it. But towards the end of the movie, when they talk about, you know, what the Red Room is, and then, you know, general, token Russian bad guy is like, you know, mind fucking with them and everything, I'm like, oh, now this has turned into, well, it's just men who want to control women. And yeah. we've seen this over and over and over again. That was the point of Echo in Hawkeye. And, yeah. and you just see it. It's disingenuous. And I don't know if this fan base of these hermaphroditic, androgynous, super liberals who don't like the comics but love Disney products and will go see these movies and they just want to see girl boss heroes, I don't think they exist. They certainly don't exist for the comic books.
They're a very loud online minority that dictate the way that they write.
they don't buy comics.
Right.
But if they had to choose between an early MCU film and the stuff that's coming out, I really want to know, do they genuinely like this shit? Or do they just feel like they have to support it because it's promoting this Disney agenda?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to that point too, it's much, I think it's deeper than like I've heard the MCU complaints and things like that. And I think there's, well, like you said, you know, it can go too far. I've seen things that are kind of like ridiculous, but at the same time, I do understand the criticisms of that, but it's not just that. Like the first, I think really failed property, that we both suffered through together was the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And the great crime for that, and I've thought about this a lot since watching that. I was like, what was it that was
folks,
so?
You gotta go on Patreon and listen. Caleb and I reviewed every episode.
I was really trying hard to.
That was a labor of love.
I was really trying. I was really trying hard to like this show, and by the end of it, I was like, this was not a good show. And it came down to the fact that I think the moment that I realized, either consciously or subconsciously, that this was a turning point for the MCU was when they had Sam talk about melting Steve's shield because it somehow represented racial injustice. When this is the same guy that you just saved the universe with, and you have known basically since he got de-thawed from the ice. After he got de-thawed, you had the Battle of New York, and Sam is that first person that Steve relates with. And you're telling me that, like, Sam, this black man in America, and Steve from the 1940s, that Sam is the first one that Steve Rogers relates with, and you're telling me that all of a sudden, despite no background whatsoever, despite no setup to this whatsoever, that all of a sudden that his friendship with Steve Rogers is just meaningless. And I know that they probably, I mean, you know, the writers would say, well, no, this was about the super soldier serum. Well, that the shield was
that way at all.
The shield was Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
That's what Captain America was. And you can make complaints about the super soldiers program and everything like that, and I think that there were some like strong elements, but I think that's part of the problem with the MCU right now is that there are several strong individual elements in all of these properties or most of these properties now, but it gets undercut by these themes that belong nowhere in the MCU that go back and basically spit on the heroes. And even in some instances, the villains that we have come to know and really come to love over the past decade plus, and they just expect us to accept it and say, well, this is just the way it is now.
Yeah, and I mean, there's abiding by source material, and then there's taking liberties with it. The Winter Soldier movie and the comic obviously have differences. There was no skull. It was focused on the cosmic cube. There was Iron Man in it, and it didn't have, you know, like a good chunk of the things. But like, they had enough of the idea, and they were able to integrate it in a way which made sense for the MCU.
Yeah.
And it is still my favorite. I will watch that movie over and over and over again.
Yeah.
That was them. It's like, we respect source material, and we're going to find a way to make it work. Versus, we don't respect it, we're going to do our own thing. And I mean, going back to Falcon and Winter Soldier, apart from Sam, the part that really broke my heart in the film, I'm sorry, in the show was, and folks, Caleb and I already talked about this for hours. You got to go back on Patreon, patreon.com.
We have hours of content for this. Yeah.
Isaiah Bradley, who is the Black Super Soldier who came before Captain America and everything. The concept, the purpose of Isaiah Bradley is not just to be black man abused, black man has justified racial hatred towards white people. That's not it. Is that part of the story of Captain America, Red, White, and Black, the limited series that came out a little bit after Young Avengers when we learned that Patriot is Isaiah's grandson? A little. I wouldn't even say it's much, because in the course of the book, yes, it talks about racial injustice. Yes, it talks about events inspired by real life stuff. The Tuskegee experiments. Don't trust your government, folks. That's part of it. But the thing is that Isaiah is a hero because he chose to basically – he's basically stopped Hitler from like doing a bunch of evil shit in one big mission he had to do. He basically chose to be a hero despite the fact that his government abused him, because he is a heroic person. And Isaiah is not saving black people. Isaiah is saving Americans because he chooses, because at that point in the comic, Captain America is a propaganda figure. They don't actually know that he's like real. So he chooses to take this inspiration from this propaganda comic book, because they don't know he's real yet. And so a little bit later, and he chooses to take a Captain America moniker and fight bad guys. And eventually years later, he's removed from that when everyone realizes that Captain America Steve Rogers is real. Like, he's a real soldier. He's a real super soldier. And over time, he goes back into public life. And sadly, he becomes mentally and physically handicapped to the point where he has the emotional maturity of a 5-year-old. And at the very end of that story, and we should totally do a reissued episode talking about Captain America, Red, White, and Black. It's an amazing series. At the end of it, Steve Rogers goes and discovers who Isaiah is, and him and Isaiah, basically, because they recognize each other, they have this connection moment where he doesn't see him as, oh, white Captain America, you're the one they celebrate. It's like, you're Captain America, you're good, you continue to do good, you represent the best of our country, and they embrace each other as soldiers and patriots. And right. It's a beautiful story. And what do they do in the show? They fuck with it and say, no, angry black man, Steve Rogers, white is bad.
Well, it's especially kind of disingenuous, because like the last time that we had seen anything with Captain America before this project, he was lifting Mjolnir. And you're telling me that the person that you just said was worthy is now a symbol of racial injustice. Like, how does that work? You know, that doesn't make any sense. You're completely just spitting on the fact that like this character is popular with a group of people that you find politically repulsive, and you're trying to insert your own opinions on that. And it's coming at the expense of the actual character and the actual storyline that you spent a decade to build up to. Like, who wasn't cheering in the theater whenever Steve Rogers was lifting Mjolnir? It doesn't matter what their political beliefs were. It doesn't matter what their, you know, racial background was or anything like that. Everyone was on their feet cheering. I remember it very well, and it was an awesome experience. But right now, like, they don't care about any of that. They care much more about advancing a certain ideology or agenda at the expense of the characters that we have come to know and love for a decade plus.
Do you think, and maybe I'm you know, cutting off my nose despite my face, do you think it was so much a decision that Marvel would have ultimately gone down, but which is what we've seen? Or do you think it was promoted by the fact that after Iron Man's success, Marvel Studios got bought by Disney? Because I can definitely see that
Disney definitely plays a role into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I almost feel like you have to take the Disney out, but if you do that, you also take out a lot of really great opportunities that otherwise we wouldn't have had.
I think a large problem that we have to acknowledge is after the Infinity Saga for reasons that I think can be perceived as legitimate. Kevin Feige took a step back from the projects, much more than what he had. Like, he had a tight.
Did he go over to Star Wars?
Well, he just kind of like loosened up his grip, and you know, he started working with Sony more, and you know, the multiverse saga. I think the temptation to insert all of these pre-existing characters is another problem that the MCU has been plagued with. As much as I mean, we'll get into this, but as much as I love to see some of these old characters back, I think that it has opened up more issues than it has, you know, great moments of fan service. So,
yeah, I'm almost worried, you know, the one project I'm like really excited for is Deadpool 3, because we're getting Wolverine and so many other things.
Yeah, I'll be there. Like, I'm going.
Yeah,
to
like go I'm gonna give them my money, but
I'll go see Hugh Jackman in a yellow suit, like I've always wanted to see. You know, that's a no brainer. But I think that it's kind of a problem because they're using, you know, this fan service in the same way the Star Wars did throughout the sequels, instead of like trying to come up with an actual story. I think one of the cool things, and one of the things that made Spider-Man No Way Home work so well, was that they didn't just incorporate Andrew Garfield as, you know, I love Andrew Garfield, and his movies were not great, but he was great. So I have no problem with him as Spider-Man's specifically, but they made the wise decision to say, no, we're going to start from scratch instead of trying to incorporate all of this, because it removed any sort of baggage and you could start from scratch, and they're not doing that now. They're constantly, and you know, they can say like, oh, well, it's the multiverse. Well, yeah, but you didn't have like a multiversal Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. You had Tom Holland.
It's like how they handled it in Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. Like, people knew who Patrick Stewart was enough.
Yeah.
But Professor X was not integral to the story.
Right.
Whereas if like Deadpool 3, you know, they've made it very clear, like, he's going to be essential to the story. I don't think Marvel is going to do like what Andy Bashitti is. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I'm not trying to be antagonistic towards the Bashitti fans out there, but like, Batman did not serve. Let me be more specific. Like, Michael Keaton did not he did not matter in Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, that's an example of it. Will
clearly matter in Deadpool 3.
And they're certainly not giving him a Nicolas Cage cameo where it's all CGI wordless for 2 seconds. So it's like, they're going to try and do this, but you know, it's like, at what point? Deadpool 2 was great. Deadpool 1 was great. Deadpool 2 was great. I don't, you know, I liked things being separate. And I think this is good. I think,
I do,
you know,
yeah.
And I'll let you finish off your mind, your process in a second. I don't want to like derail it. But like, I think this is what I really miss. I miss solo superhero movies that didn't feel connected. I loved the Fox X-Men series. Days of Future.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Future Past is still probably my favorite superhero film, period. I love Days of Future Past. I like, I will even defend Superman Returns as part of being with the Donner series and stuff like that. And I mean, even the first couple DCEU flicks, you know, Man of Steel and stuff like that, like, they were just really good standalone movies. They've lost the art of making good standalone films for their own sake. And I say this as a self-proclaimed hypocrite, because Multiverse of Madness, which is both in our top five MCU films, is just like franchise, crossover, spin-off, cameo galore. But like, Those are two different things. I could say I love that movie as entertainment. I would not look at Multiverse of Madness and say that movie is a piece of art.
Yeah.
That in terms of quality and everything is just a completely different
standard. I would say that about Guardians 3.
Yes.
I would absolutely say that about
Guardians 3.
And you know what? Yeah. You know what? The reason why that movie was so good was because it didn't do exactly what you were just describing. It had no connection to anything except basically the last Guardians of the Galaxy movie, and barely even that, you know. Yeah. It was so refreshingly independent that it was just a wonderful, wonderful movie. And I think that was, I mean, we'll get into this in, I think, just a second, because I have ideas about ways that we could fix, if we had the Infinity Gauntlet, like you said, you know, how we could fix this. But I think Guardians 3 is probably the only property I would not touch whatsoever. It was
how much leeway wonderful. Do you give the directors, though? Because for every James Gunn, we get like a Rachel Zhao in the Eternals.
Well, you know, I think, well, again, this comes back to Kevin Feige. There was like a time where I would say, like, in Kevin Feige, I trust, because there was nothing that, regardless of what, I would just turn off the news and turn off everyone like frantically saying like, oh, can you believe this and this, and say, well, you know what? I trust in Kevin Feige because he's never failed. Up until like 2019, I would say that. But after that, when he would start to loosen his grip, that's when whenever I would start to doubt. I think that you bring a director on for a good reason, as long as you have certain guardrails of like, this is what we need to do to advance the story and to advance this universe that we're trying to build. I mean, you know, the Russo brothers had that freedom, but you also have to have people who understand what you're trying to do. So you can't just say like, okay, go make a movie for me. You have to say, okay, go make this movie for me, so that way we can achieve this and hand the directors that. I don't mind giving directors a lot of freedom, because I think that's where a lot of those really fantastic moments of the small little moments that only a director in the middle of his art form can create. So I don't want like a studio monstrosity the way that some of the worst comic book films are. But at the same time, there has to be some guidance. And it can't just be like Taika Waititi going around and, you know, just making whatever he made with Thor: Love and Thunder. So,
yeah. So I'll just let you go from here. What are the potential completely hypothetical solutions you toss at this?
Well, at this point, well, I should say this. I don't know if there's necessarily a solution until they axe the multiverse, which I do think that they are working towards, with Loki and with Kang and stuff like that. But this will, I think, forever be plagued as a disappointing saga in the MCU, with a few highlights, certainly Guardians, Werewolf by Night, different things like that. But I think it stems back to, we really should have had a break. And we really should have kind of gotten back to the basics with Phase 4. And one of the things that made the Infinity Saga, Phases 1 through 3, work so well was because it was gradual, it was intentional, there wasn't like a significant buildup very suddenly. It was just like, this phase, for Phase 1, we're going to introduce these heroes. There's not really going to be much, if any, crossover. It's just going to be, we're going to focus on these heroes. And then so on and so forth, until we eventually get to Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, where you can just naturally have all these characters and it doesn't feel out of place. I think the problem was that they wanted to jump straight into Secret Wars right after Endgame. And that was a huge mistake that they should not have done. The Phase 4, I think, should have been an epilogue for the Infinity Saga and a prologue for the next phase. It should almost be like detached from either saga. And I think that should have been a like an Avengers disassembled theme throughout Phase 4. And as they build that, honestly, a lot of the properties that they put out, I would just axe. I would not have put out. Even if I enjoyed them, even if like what they made was like good in that sense, I would either axe or delay it or completely change it.
I feel like Marvel got into this idea that everything they touch is turns to gold. And it's because of primarily which was
because
true.
They followed that formula,
and it comes down, and it comes down to two characters specifically. Well, two sets of properties. It comes down to Iron Man, which started mm-hmm. it, because that was the big gamble. They took not a B-lister, they took a C-list hero, like borderline B-list C-list, and they made him into that. And then Guardians of the Galaxy. It was those two films where it was like, damn, those could really do it. So it's like, when they, you know, when people protest Echo, the criticism is, well, look at Iron Man and Guardians. That means anyone could do it. It's like Echo is nowhere there. Like you can't say that, because it's not in the same ballpark. And it's not because she's a woman. Mm-hmm. You know, She-Hulk, by all intents and purposes, should have been a hit.
Right.
She-Hulk.
In the same way that like they had success with Guardians, they had success with Iron Man. She-Hulk was like basically a legacy character in Marvel Comics. You know, she wasn't a new character that they just came up with, and it should have worked, and it didn't. So I also think Disney Plus is a big problem.
I feel like the streaming, and maybe I would say they shouldn't have ever done streaming, but at the same time, what does that do? That eliminates Daredevil on Netflix and that stuff. So it's like, if they wanted to parse it out, I was always of the thought that for all the work that they put into a Netflix Daredevil TV show, they should have just made a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, okay, if I could snap my fingers and get what I want, I wouldn't have ever done the Netflix streaming thing, because I think that caused a lot of confusion. That caused a lot of problems that we would eventually have between Netflix and Disney Plus and Hulu and all that. Because people forget, there were also Hulu shows that came out. Nobody knew what was going on with those. I would take a step back. I would say, if you're going to have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., maybe Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the source of it. Maybe just cut no TV tie-ins, none of that stuff, and just do movies.
Yeah.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to be a movie at one point. It was going to be a Nick Fury-focused movie. It's like, they should have stuck with what they were good at. They wanted to be in all these different areas. So, yeah, no, I would have said just cancel the TV the TV stuff. ABC, all that stuff. Don't license out characters. It's like the mess that James Gunn inherited with all these extra properties all over the place, and he wants to get them all in house. Like, I get it. I wouldn't have done TV.
Well, they tried to fix that, you know, whenever Disney Plus came around, and they were like, okay, these aren't canon basically anymore. And I was fine with that. I was like, okay, it makes it cleaner. It makes it easier. That's fine. But I think that they, for some reason, got in their heads that Disney Plus could replace the movies almost, and they could just like introduce these properties that no one cares about at like a very high, rapid volume with the same big budget blockbuster, you know, quality in terms of like production value. And people would just continue to eat it up. And it's like, well, no, we ate this up for 10 years because you took the time to actually invest in these characters and build out their stories, and just throwing a TV show on and say, you care about this, right? Well, no, not necessarily. I don't. But like, I would honestly, I thought starting with WandaVision was a really smart move, because it was so refreshing and it was so uniquely made for a series. That I would completely keep that. But would I keep Falcon and the Winter Soldier? No. even Black Widow, on the movie side of things, it did nothing to progress.
Yeah, it absolutely. Like, that's not a value add movie.
It was not a value add whatsoever. The entire time I was like, this is unimportant. As good as it, I thought it was a decent film. It wasn't.
It was like Tomb Raider. Like,
yeah, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't Winter Soldier or anything like that. But it was a decent film. But it did nothing to advance the MCU as a whole. A lot of those films, I would say the first, like, really spectacular movie that came out post-Endgame was No Way Home. And I love Shang-Chi too.
Shang-Chi is a good example of a movie which is predominantly a standalone flick.
It is, yes. Shang-Chi was a really good movie. I would probably, in my ideal phase four, I would probably not release it in that phase. I wouldn't can it, but I would push it back a little bit to tie up some of these threads before diving into some new ones. Maybe introduce, you know, some of his characters or some of his lore gradually. But I would focus primarily on trying to tie up some threads. And the movies that we did get, and even the movies that I absolutely adored, like No Way Home, or had a lot of fun with, like Multiverse of Madness, if I were to make those movies, it would look nothing like what they ended up looking like.
Completely different. I was always of the camp, and this is going back to 2019, give Spider-Man back to Sony. Because I you know, my thing, and No Way Home obviously fixes that, but, you know, this is hindsight. Spider-Man is not a sidekick. Spider-Man is not a person who happens to solve all his problems of technology. And that's what I was missing from Spider-Man. By the end of No Way Home, of course, I feel like they course corrected. And I think his name was the director, Drew Goddard. Like, he obviously wants to take him back to that more classic direction. But I will have been like, you know, if you don't know what to do with him and you're just going to try and throw shit together, like kind of like how they did with Far From Home, which I'm not a fan of it. Give him back to Sony.
Yeah, I would still keep Spider-Man the way that we did, because it made sense.
It worked out, but it was like,
yeah, I understand. Yeah. I understand the criticism that he had for a while. But I still, like, I really love Homecoming. I think that's such a wonderful film.
And I like the Across the Spider-Verse films more than the last couple live action ones. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
I feel like Spider-Man, I'm more optimistic for that, but I don't see him as like an MCU property at this point. I see them definitely, especially now since they erased everyone's memories, you know, No Way Home, One More Day, Brand New Day style. Like, we're going to get more of those types of projects. But, you know,
I would, if I were in charge, I would not have done anything multiverse related, as great as it was to see Willem Dafoe back in action and Tobey Maguire and all of those characters that, you know, that we grew up with absolutely loving. I would have done what, as far as I'm aware, it was supposed to be at first a movie with Kraven the Hunter as the main villain. And introduce some of these like MCU organic versions of characters, like Norman Osborn, or like maybe someone like the Kingpin or someone like that. Yeah. To have a, like, you could still basically have the same hits and the same threads that you did with, you know, he's out on his own and he has to learn how to be Spider-Man without all this technology, or and maybe he even, you know, runs to Doctor Strange for some help. You can still do all of that kind of stuff without it being like a big multiversal thing, because I think that they've used the multiverse as so much of a crutch, a plot crutch for so much of phase four, that it has significantly damaged the brand. And I think that as great as they did it in Spider-Man, it continued to damage that in the long run.
What do you do about Jonathan Majors?
I would not introduce Kang whatsoever right now. I would use phase four as a build up to the Dark Avengers. Because in a world without the Avengers, and a vacuum fills, that naturally leads to, you know, nefarious figures, especially in to pick up some threads that were left over from like the Sokovia Accords and everything, it would make all the sense in the world to me that the governments of the world would compile certain undesirable individuals to fill that void and do what needs to be done. And you have them end up being the villains of such a movie. And you could even use some legacy characters as kind of like the plot, pushing the plot forward, like the Hulk, and actually kind of fix his, you know, like, I did not like Smart Hulk personally. I want like a berserker machine, basically. I want him to go and rage and destroy things. I would use him as sort of the villain, so to speak, of a Dark Avengers property, where it's like Dark Avengers versus World War Hulk, or incorporate Siege, and I think would be awesome to see Thor.
They seem to be treating the Thunderbolts movie, which people thought would be Dark Avengers for a while, they seem to be treating Thunderbolts more like Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I think that's a mistake.
No, yeah, it is. It is. And I do not, I mean, Suicide Squad is great. You know, it's a great concept. And James Gunn obviously did really well with that, with his version. But I think the right move for the universe that the MCU has built would have been using Phase 4 as this palate cleanser, tie up some threads, and then go into the Dark Avengers.
So to kind of wrap things up, here's what I'm getting with. Everything from the Infinity Saga stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing is, one, they got to abide more to the source material. Two, you know, as much as we like Shang-Chi, you got to go ahead and maybe stick with more of your core characters. No Echoes, no anything like that. Four, leave Daredevil, leave a lot of the Netflix era Marvel characters out non-canon, like what Disney really tried to do. Well, at the same time, ditching the multiverse, no Kang, no any of this stuff. Sorry, Daredevil. Just focusing on what the crux of the MCU is. Keep Spider-Man, and in terms of the story, have it lead towards a Dark Avengers confrontation in which you got to get your Trinity. Now, obviously, Iron Man's dead, but your core MCU characters who fans have been with for a while to come back and be true heroes again. In something inspired kind of like Siege. Is that a good prognosis?
For the most part, I actually would want to try to reintroduce Daredevil into the MCU, but not in the way that they're going about it.
New actor, new thing.
You know, I would even consider keeping Charlie Cox. I don't think that was so integrated in the same way that like Fox or, you know, Sony or things like that. But I think
Charlie Cox is different than a Hugh Jackman.
Right. Yeah. And I don't mind having, you know, the same actors, but it seems like they're indecisive about whether or not they want to make the Netflix show like an extension of what his story already is, or whether or not they just want to completely start from scratch.
I think they're gonna fuck it up and piss everyone off.
probably. But I would love for, you know, Phase 4 if it explored some of the street heroes like Daredevil more, so because there's no reliance anymore on the Avengers. I would love it if they really dived hard into the supernatural, like the stuff that they worked that worked really well, like Werewolf by Night. I would keep that. That's probably the other property. I would also use the special presentations much more than shows. I think that they've done really well with the special presentations.
What is it now? It's Werewolf by Night and the Guardians and the Galaxy Christmas special. Yeah.
And I think those work really well for Disney Plus. I would keep those, and I would honestly do more of it. I think it'd be really cool if you want to do something with, you know, with, Disney Plus. They kind of did this with Netflix, where they had like the Avengers style build up, but for much darker characters.
Yeah.
Like with
Defenders,
Daredevil and the Defenders. I would do something maybe similar with that to the Midnight Suns. Yeah, I think that would be really cool.
I feel like they wanted to go in that direction, and then at some point they were just like, "Eh, forget about it."
Yeah, that's the other problem, is that they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what story they're trying to build up to anymore, other than Kang, which I think Kang is great. And I will my thought on the problems that the current MCU has is that one of the biggest things that annoyed the hell out of me was that as soon as Thanos was done, they said, all right, he wasn't really that cool, right? He wasn't really that that powerful, because now we have Kang. And they completely undercut everything that they built up to in a way that was even worse than the way that they treated like some of the heroes like Iron Man or Captain America, because they just showed that, like, in the grand scheme of the multiverse, he's not really a powerful character.
You don't introduce Darth Vader in a TV show.
Yeah.
And that was my criticism how they did it with He Who Will Not Be Named in Loki. And then it's like, you don't introduce Darth Vader in a TV show. You don't introduce Darth Vader in your least popular character's third movie. I think introducing him in Ant-Man as Kang was stupid.
You know, I mean,
you don't introduce Darth Vader in the Chewbacca movie.
I also don't think that Kang is a Darth Vader. Yeah, I think Kang is a really cool character, but he should not
be. Thanos was a Darth Vader.
Kang
is not a Darth Vader.
No, he's not. And
he's a Count Dooku at best.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you can have a cool character, but the fact that they try to show that he's, like, actually much better than Thanos, just like a year or two after Thanos was
they haven't shown it either. They keep having it's like expositional marketing. They're telling you instead of actually like proving to you, showing to you.
Right.
And then they have to do that. The cushion, you know, fallen expectations. They're not even good at that anymore.
Yeah. I think that's probably the biggest thing. I mean, I had problems whenever they showed Ultron as the Vision just sliced Thanos in half. Like, that really irritated me. But at least with Ultron, he's an actual, like, legitimate threat. If he got to his full potential, I don't think they should have done that. But it's a better case than Kang, I think. Yeah. I think that it would have been awesome to see some sort of conflict to where, like, the Avengers are fighting Kang, and who do they have to bring out to finally defeat him? Thanos. I think that would have been a cool tie around to show, like, actually Thanos was the big bad. Like, he was every bit as dangerous as we portrayed him to be. And I think Star Wars at least understands that, for as much as, you know, as bad as they've gotten with some of these things, they at least understand that it's like, our legacy villain is the villain of villains. And we can't just constantly, like, do this power creep, where I feel like the MCU somehow missed that.
Yeah. They've fallen victim of their own aspirations in many ways. Yeah.
They should not have immediately undercut it. If you were going to make Kang a Thanos level threat, then you should have taken 10 years to build up to that. You should not have just immediately, actually, he's the big bad now.
Yeah. Well, dude, I think this covers a lot. I think we actually do kind of get to an idea. And, you know, I'd be interested to see what people have to say about this, because I'm very much on my worst days. I'm very much, they should have just ended it. And part of me is still like, maybe they should just end it after this. But, you know, that's not going to happen.
I don't know if ending it is the right solution or not, or if it was the right solution or not. But I will say that ending it on a high note is always infinitely better than letting it get muddied and having, you know, the properties become broken. So
yeah, I want to say, you know, they were in a dark period and then they fixed it. And that's the roller coaster of being a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hopefully that works out. I don't think this is sustainable, so something will give. That much I'm confident of. I hope that it doesn't mean that they just completely stop making movies. I hope that they come to their senses before that they get to that point. But, like, I mean, having, like, the equivalent of as many properties as the entire Infinity Saga in, like, 3 years is not good, and it's not a way to people want to appreciate and salivate these movies every time that they come out. They want to feel like it's an event every time that it comes out, and
if it's worth the money,
take time
out of the day to go to a movie theater,
and they want to feel like it matters whenever they watch it, like it's building up to like this epic that the Infinity Saga was, and that's just not what they're doing right now. I've any satisfaction that I got over seeing Jonathan Majors walk out the end of Loki as Kang and saying like, oh man, they're doing it, this is so cool, which I don't think they necessarily did this in Loki. I think the greater offenses came later with other properties like What If or Ant-Man or different things like that, but it was exciting whenever Loki came out, because Loki was a good property, and at that time the only thing that was really a miss was Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Now that can't be said. Now they've damaged the IP too much, and they really need to reevaluate where they're going with this before they move forward with anything else.
Yeah. Caleb, if anyone wants to argue with you about all of this online, how could they do so?
You can DM me and your either pro or antithetical views on Twitter at Caleb Franz.
And folks, you can go ahead and also hit up Caleb and all the other supporters of the show by joining our private Facebook group, the Second for Comics Fan Zone, where you join for as little as 5 smackers a month at patreon.com/secondprintpod. Thank you once again. We'll be back next week. I know I was going to talk about something big at the end, but I think I'll hold it for just a few more days. As always, thank you one, thank you all, and remember, if you can't do anything, you can do this. You can read comics and change the world. Good night, America.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.